This is an oral history interview with Lucas Floyd Jove on the 15th of April 2011 on Marion Island.
So, you came to Marion Island for the first time when?
That was in April 2002.
And you stayed
for the whole year.
What team number was that?
Team number Marion 59.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
Well, I came as a sailor.
As a sailor?
Yeah, as a sailor.
Okay. Yeah. So how did it happen that you applied to go? Why did you want to come here?
Well, I must say it was a bit by chance, of course, to get an opportunity. Because as far as I remember, we knew about Marion Island because some of our, or rather say, student mates, had previously an opportunity to work with Professor Beste, and we were studying at the University of Venda then.
Okay.
And we knew about this guy who came just before us, and you know, our professor used to, you know, say highly of him, speak highly of him. And we then knew of Marion Island, and we had interest in going. And just after completing my BSc degree, he got in touch to Professor Beste, and his name was Geiger, Professor Geiger, of which I can't remember his initials or first names are. But he contacted Professor Beste and, well, pioneered, you know, the way in. And we found ourselves here. And
brilliant.
That was a very, very good experience indeed.
Good. Did you have any interest in Antarctica or the islands or anything before you came here?
No, not at all. Because, as I said, we didn't know anything about the island per se. But then, you know, they
just from hearsay.
From hearsay that, you know, there's such so and so is doing well. He's in Marion Island, working on seals. And
okay,
to us, you know, we didn't even know what a seal is. Because I mean, I'm from a, I'm not so sure whether you know Messina.
It's a little bit. It's north.
It's way, or rather say, the very last town just before the Zimbabwean border in the north. So, obviously, the sea was quite new for me. And again, a colleague of mine who was my partner then, was a fellow sailor, was also from Venda, and his name was Takarani Maswime. And he also was in the same position because, you know, we had never traveled from Venda. We studied in Venda, and these opportunities, of course, opened doors. That's when we went to Pretoria for the first time for interviews.
Oh, okay.
Following which, we went to Cape Town, see the sea for the first time. You know, being in the ship itself for the first time was quite a remarkable experience, so to say.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to ask you about that now. But first, can you describe the team preparations for everyone before you left?
Well, the team preparation happened in Pretoria then,
okay,
which is quite the opposite of, or rather say, which is quite different from, you know, what the new teams are being prepared for.
Yeah, they're being prepared in Cape Town.
In Cape Town,
now,
yeah.
Okay, but you were still in Pretoria.
We did our team training in Pretoria, and it lasted for about 2 weeks, if I remember well. And, you know, we were people of the different background, and you know, the diversity itself was quite threatening to some of us, in a sense that, you know, well, I had never been in close association with some people, so to say, and again, it posed lot and lots of questions for me, whether will I be part of the team or not.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And to tell you the honest truth, the way in instances where I asked myself whether I'll survive or not, because I mean, we had never been in other, you know, associated
in that environment.
In that environment, and again, you know, social wise, we had never met other people. Instead of, you know, the two of us, we knew each other from back then, and well, we did well in as a team.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, to get, okay, the other thing is, what preparations did you make specifically for your job as a sealer?
Well, as far as I remember, we spent a day or two with Professor Beste just before we went for the actual team training. And he sat with us and gave us, you know, what I would today call, you know, a work plan of some sort.
Yeah.
And said, look, you're going to be dealing with sales. Mm. And this is what is going to be expected of you. But then, you obviously know, we didn't know sales then.
Mm.
So, I didn't even have an imagination of what a sale looks like. Because, to tell you the honest truth, I knew I was going into an island where I'm going to be working on sales. And I knew that I had to, you know, walk along the coast, recover the census, you know, or rather say take data, and then weigh pups at some point. And I didn't even, my worry was also the difference between southern elephant seals and fair seals,
yeah,
which I thought maybe would be difficult for me to tear apart, because he kept on speaking of fair seals. And on the other hand, he spoke of southern elephant seals, of which it didn't make even sense to me.
Did he show you any pictures or anything?
Yeah, there were pictures, but, you know,
still,
that fear was obviously there, because, I mean, all I wanted to do was to perform best, be the best employee ever. And yet, you know, I had such questions that, you know, will I be able to do it or not? Because of uncertainty, so to say.
Cool. Now, the journey there. Mm-hmm. So you went on the Agulhas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who the captain was?
No. Unfortunately, then, I was not... I was not seasick, but then...
No.
Not at all.
Oh, in your first time on the ship?
In my first time. And I must say, we had... That was one of the worst voyages I've ever been. Because we had very high swells, of which I can't really tell you how, you know, high were they. But then I know for sure that the night before we arrived in Marion Island, I fell in the salon. We were heading for lunch, you know, as usual, 11:30. It was our lunchtime ever since then. And I walked all the way from my cabin to the dining room. Just when I got there, because of the swells, the ship was, you know, going sideways and all that. And I fell, and Alvin, you know, the guy with glasses back at the ship, he fell on top of me with soup.
Hot soup.
It was luckily, you know, warm soup, hot soup as such. And, well, it was one of those things which I promised myself I'm not getting into the Asia Galas again, because forgetting that I need to go back home.
Yeah. You know,
obviously, the Asia Galas was the only mode of transport from Marion Island to home, of course. So that was one of the incidences which I can remember clearly.
But what did you do on the ship?
On the ship?
Yeah, on the way down.
On the way down, I'm a very, very serious music lover.
Ah.
And I remember Professor Bester had bought me a CD player.
Nice.
You know, like one of those portable CD players, stereos.
Yeah.
And I had brought my music with, and of course a book, which I spent most of my time sitting, you know, like at a heli hangar, reading. Yeah. And there were quite a number of oceanographers then who were, you know, quite enthusiastic. And again, they were very jolly people. So we would play now and then at the heli deck. And one other thing that I remember clearly, back then, we never had a helicopter at the back of the Asia Galas, you know, where they come off is.
Mm.
So the only helicopter we had was straight into the heli hangars.
Okay. So that whole deck was open?
Was open for, you know, for games or...
What kind of games did you play?
I remember we once tried volleyball. But then obviously we were...
It didn't last very long.
It didn't last long. Because, I mean, the safety was a major issue. So we were warned not to do it. But I remember that day we had fun. And again, we also tried some table tennis right straight in the hangar. As I said, I mean, the helicopter was just one, and you know, the other heli hangar was open for games.
Okay. So, when you arrived here at Marion that first time, what did you think? What did you feel?
Well, I must say, it was such a disappointment because we had a tractor on top of, in the ship itself, in the hangar. So my perception of Marion was completely different in a sense that I expected at least the tractor to be offloaded. We could use it and do all sorts of things. But then when I got here, I didn't even, when we were busy, you know, getting this issue, I never understood why we would be using gumboots, for instance.
Ah.
So when I then landed, you know, things were very, very quick in a sense that I didn't even know, you know, where we were heading to. But the first time I stepped off the catwalk, I was on my way to tripod with the guy who had been, who were relieving, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a very, very totally different perception of Marion. I at least expected
us
solid ground, or even have a helicopter the whole year, which would obviously help us in this task that we got from our bosses, of course, which was not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I expected lots. Trees, you know, like palm trees and stuff like that. But it, because I mean, when you hear of an island, you'll be talking about islands such as Zanzibar and all that. But then,
yeah, you don't think a frozen island.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you spend a lot of time with the outgoing team?
Well, we were most of the time we spent, you know, preparing ourselves, and I must say we never had, you know, lots of interaction with them. But then only, we got to know the person who were your predecessor, so to say.
What kind of things did they tell you?
Well, we, luckily with our predecessor, he was somebody who we knew.
Ah, okay.
And we could relate in many respects. Because, he was Venda, I'm Tsonga myself. Mm. And the other guy, Takalani Maswime, is Venda. Mm. And we knew this guy because he was, as I said, our fellow colleague at Varsity, but he had came here before us and all that. So, but all in all, he warned us about, you know, the danger of being, getting lost, the dangers of Mayas, and he trained us well in terms of, you know, vegetation structure, and obviously finding you using that as some sort of a navigation tool.
Okay.
We should always look at the ground and know where you'll be heading to, and you shouldn't be following footsteps that you think, you know, they are not as valid as ever. Because I mean, you could be following somebody's who's been lost as well, and all that.
Yeah.
So he taught us to navigate. Because I remember our first trip, longest first trip, was when we went to Kildare. And to be honest with you, I couldn't even see the road. I mean, the way, the path itself.
Was it misty?
It was way too misty. And I couldn't even see the people ahead of me. And we had to cross over Stony Ridge and obviously cross over to Kildare. Yet, he did well. He knew where we were, and he navigated well. So those are the kind of things that
are very important skills.
Mm-hmm. Especially in Marion.
Did he also take you down to Ship's Cove and some of the other places to see the seals?
Yeah.
And what was it like to see a seal for the first time?
Well, the first time, I was way too excited.
Okay.
Especially when it came to fair seal pubs. Because we had to, our first trip to tripod was meant to go and take, you know, mother baby pair for, you know, observation purposes and all that. And we were quite fascinated because I remember I almost, you know, handled it for, you know, for quite a long time, because I know for sure that, you know, we were missing dogs. I'm a dog lover.
Oh, I see.
And still, you know, fur seals were quite cute for me. And again, I thought, you know, those will be good pets to have. Mm. And I must say, they were quite cute.
Were you ever bitten?
By a seal?
Yes.
Well, there's quite a number of stories which I can tell you about almost being bitten. For one of the highlights was when I was almost crushed, you know, like an elephant seal.
Males?
Not a male. You know, the elephant seals have a tendency of watching each other's tail, you know, when they are busy molting.
Mm.
And one would lie across, you know, like facing the other direction, and the other one would be lying facing, you know, like almost parallel to each other.
Oh, yes.
And, well, part of our job is to look at the, or rather say, recover the information engraved in a tag. So I remember, you know, being short-sighted. I use glasses, but then out there in the field, they are of no use because you end up getting stimmed and you can't see. So I had this trick. I would go blow blow some air on the flippers of a seal. Then they open up in a sense that I can read the tag easily.
Yeah, the number on the tag.
The number on the tag. Well, that day I had gone to Repetos and I found two seals, you know, sleeping as I told you earlier. And I went to blow on the tail of the other one. Yet the other one had its head close by. So I remember I was wearing a beanie, and just by mere blowing, the other, you know, the seal opened its flipper. Yet the one sleeping right across saw me and grabbed me. You know, like grabbed. I had an afro, very huge afro. And he grabbed, you know, the afro and the beanie. And part of my hair got, you know,
ripped out.
Ooh.
with
obviously the beanie. Then, you know, the seal ended up running away, and I had to, like, pick up the beanie halfway closer to the beach.
Yes, that was lucky.
That was lucky. And then the second one, which will probably be the last one, which I'll tell you, one of the highlights, was when we were at Cape Davis. Masime and I, you know, Takalani, we had a task to weigh some festival pups. And the way it works is we had a stony, or rather say the boulders area and the vegetation. We were supposed to weigh 50-50 of the pups. And that day, we unfortunately, it was breeding season for festivals, tropically, so to say. So we managed to do the vegetation with ease, because there we could maneuver and obviously run easily when the parents come charging. And you'd remember that fur seals are very territorial in a sense that, you know, they don't want anything around whenever they're breeding. So when we went to the boulder side, well, I was always the brave person when it comes to, you know, charging seals and all that. And I would even go an extra mile. So Masime was meant to distract a couple of bulls which were, you know, which had occupied an area, and there were like four of them. So I ended up opting to go right in the middle to go get some pups for weighing, of course. Not knowing that, you know, I'll get my feet stuck in between the boulders. So, unfortunately, you know, the two seals, or rather say, all four bulls came charging at the same time. And I tried to, like, get my feet out. And I didn't even have a stick with me, because, I mean, it wasn't norm. I was so used to working with fur seals and all that, but that day, I didn't know that, you know, during breeding season, this, you know, the level of testosterone is too high, and again, they can do anything. But I fell, you know, twisted my ankle, just when I was expecting to hear about it. Nothing happened. All I had was, you know, a couple of slaps, flippers on me, all over.
Really? So they were hitting you with a flipper?
With flippers. But, you know, this is what happened. They started charging each other, biting, fighting on top of me. And simply because they all most probably thought, you know, they were invading each other's territory.
Oh.
So they started charging each other, fighting right on top of me. And, you know, they never beat me.
Yes, you're lucky.
Very, very lucky. So those are the highlights which
yes,
I can tell you about
fantastic.
My job.
So but just tell me, how did you get your foot out?
Eventually, my swimmer came
okay. he helped. Okay.
But then it wasn't so easy because he also struggled to get into the, you know, the thing because two seals were fighting. You know, in fact, all four of them were biting each other. And it got to a point where he came and then loosened, you know, the boulders with his stick.
Okay.
And obviously trying to distract the seals and chasing them away. And we then walked back to base, of course, with me limping.
Yeah. Describe a day in the life of a sealer.
A day in the life of a sailor.
Yes, what was your day-to-day routine like?
Our day-to-day routine, well, the problem is with sailors, we had a schedule to adhere to. So during normal duty day, you'd be expected to wake up very early in the morning and then prepare for yourself, with me being lighter back then, which I couldn't stick, you know, right on the ground when on windy days, of course. I would go to an extent of going to a pantry, grab a couple of cans, put them in my backpack just to get a bit of weight, then walk out, no matter how raining it is. No matter how windy it may be, we would be walking either inland, straight to where we were supposed to start our coastal work, and then come back all the way from base. And the other thing that made us different from, you know, other sailors, myself and Takalani, we never liked staying at huts back then. Because huts were infested with mice, of course. You probably remember, but I hated, or rather say, I hate mice even now.
Yeah, well,
they might
so, too.
Yeah, so basically, a day-to-day would be going, you know, blowing wind on, you know, seals that are sleeping. Then you get the information, then walk back. And it's such a nice feeling when you step on the catwalk. And obviously, there'll be warm coffee and, you know, a nice shower. And obviously, you obviously fight with people over your clothes being, you know, we're the very, very stinking people in the base. And you would know when we're back.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now tell me, what were the challenges living on Marion Island?
Well, challenges were, I must say, you know, the length itself was quite a challenge. Because I remember pretty well that, you know, I used to ask myself how home would be like when I get back. And, you know, even though we had telephone calls and we could make telephone calls and internet, but then we had this challenge that, you know, things may not necessarily be the same when you're not at home. They may tell you and you still be inclined to believe that, you know, there's gonna be quite a number of changes when you got back, and whether you're gonna be fitting into the society again and all that. So those are the kind of challenges which I had,
sure.
And obviously, we also had quite a number of challenges as a team. I mean, understanding the next person was one of those, and how they behave and all that. You know, those are the kind
team
of
dynamics.
Team dynamics, so to say. Because, I mean, we're different people from with a different background and again different upbringing and stuff
so you,
like yeah.
So you said you had to adjust quite a lot to these strange people and you're all not living together on the
very planet. True, very true. Those are the kind of things we. And to add on to that, I mean, most of them, or rather say, most of the people in our team were either coming for the second time or they had been in other islands.
Oh.
So, I mean.
So that also made it different because they had had more experience and you didn't.
Very true, very true.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now on a lighter note, what did you do for entertainment when you weren't working?
Well, with me, I watched movies. You know, like I used to watch movies a lot. Mm. And I don't drink, so, well, I didn't even have booze on the island, except, you know, some of the sponsored issues which I got. But then, still, I would still, you know, party with everyone else in the team. And I remember we used to have parties as well. But then you'd imagine that, you know, not being a drinker and being exposed to, you know, people who are drinking and all that. It doesn't really matter, but then you'd not be excited as they are, because, I mean, alcohol can excite people heavily. But.
Yeah. So, what did you do for midwinter?
Midwinter? I remember I was a judge.
Oh, did you have the Maid Marian competition then?
Very true. I mean, So, I remember I opted to be a judge simply because of I didn't really, you know, like, well, not necessarily like, but I never pictured myself wearing a dress or doing all sorts of funny things. Yeah. Mm. But I remember I was the judge and a DJ at some point, and then it got to a point where we had fun.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
So, did you have any interaction with any of the other bases? For example, did you have messages from Sanai or maybe some of the other islands or any such things?
The only person who was really in touch with other base was the Metgasi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because most probably because of his duty. Because back then, I remember Gov used to get internet at night. Mm. Then we'd get it during the day.
Oh, okay.
And then Senai, I can't remember where did Senai feature, but we used to exchange the line,
okay,
so to say. But then the Metgasi had to send a sign up to Pretoria every 3 hours, if I remember well.
Mm.
So, for him to do so, he must first ask Gov to, you know, disconnect, and then you do that.
Okay.
And and for him to phone as well and confirm that, you know,
that
Pretoria,
they received it.
Yeah, Gov had to like disconnect. So he knew most people, and whenever they hear his voice, of course, they would know that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Phineas from Marion Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have any visits from ships or helicopters or any such things during your year?
We had a yacht coming in.
A yacht?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it so happened that, you know, that yacht was somewhere within the vicinity, so they wanted some fresh water for that matter. So they came. I remember we were not supposed to, you know, gave them water. But then we phoned Cape Town, and then Cape Town allowed us to, you know, to give them water. But we were strictly warned not to get to the yard or even, you know, accepting anything that they're going to give. Because I know for sure that, you know, those guys had fresh vegetables.
Oh.
And, you know, they had biltong, which we didn't have at the time. So we were very, very desperate. But we never accepted any of their offers. I remember they even, you know, attempted to give us a bottle of wine, but we... Obviously, the team leader disagreed, but most of us, as team members, we were very, very upset that he never wanted to change.
Yeah, and
the other visit was, you probably remember the French guy who crashed in Marion Island, Henry Choros.
Yes.
Yeah. So it so happened that that morning, myself and Phineas, I was getting ready to go out for my field work. And I had opted to go simply because my partner had an injury. And I was meant to, you know, carry out the load all by myself. So it so happened that they called while Phineas was changing a sun chart. And I happened to pick up the phone. Mm. And I spoke to the American embassy. Then I remember, you know,
okay.
Or American agent of some
okay,
sort.
Okay.
Then I had to like, call Derek Yelverton because it didn't make sense. First, I called Phineas and asked if there was any runaway at Marion Island.
Yeah.
Of which, to me, you know, back then, I didn't even know what the runaway was. But then they kept on saying a runaway and where a plane can land and all that. So to me, it was a very new story. So I had to get a second opinion from someone. Then I called Phineas. Phineas then said, look, let us call Derek Yelverton. Mm-hmm. He would be able to assist. Because we could tell that, you know, this person is in a desperate situation. And they even made it clear that it's a matter of life and death. We can either pick him up, you know,
alive
or dead. Then we then called Derek Yelverton, which was very early in hours of the morning, 5 o'clock if I remember well. Then Derek answered and then, you know, they spoke to him and they came to terms that, you know, they're supposed to call Henry and talk to him about it. And then Henry was the guy who came back to us and said, find any hotspot and have this guy landing. So, at that time, Michel Detoit, who was a conservation officer, was not at the base. And the only person who was there to decide was Derek Yelverton. And he was, if I remember well, a radio tech. Yeah, he was a radio tech. And he didn't have, I wouldn't say true sense of conservation, but, you know, some of these things were not as clear cut to him. He then decided to go to the, you know, Zone 4 area where we had a colony of wandering albatrosses. And of which Michelle was pretty much upset when she came back from the Round Island, which I must also say she was so puzzled to see a plane because that was such a show off of some sort, which you can't miss from far away. So yeah, we then walked all the way to the incident where it happened, and what was really so striking was the mere fact that when he landed, we had all been given instructions that, you know, for field workers, we're supposed to stand right aside.
Mm.
And then...
In terms of the breeding colony?
No, we're
in
supposed
terms
to...
of him?
Safety-wise.
Oh, okay.
We were given clear instructions that, you know, you guys are going to be waiting there. And then the only people who would approach the aircraft after landing was meant to be Derek, Paul Petter, who was a diesel mech, as well as Alfonso Miles, who was a medic.
Oh, okay.
So, which was fair enough, because Paul was meant to go and break the aircraft and make sure that, you know, they put out the fire and the team leader. And so, not forgetting that, you know, the place was very miry, in a sense that I remember it well. It so happened, and in no time, Henry, we directed him to a hot spot where he was supposed to, but he landed a bit earlier into a mire, and then the plane flipped, as John has told. Yeah.
Yeah, the picture. Yeah.
Very true. Then myself and Phineas, or rather say the designated people, were standing right across a mire, in a sense that by the time they landed, they ran all the way trying to approach the plane, but then they all sink. In a sense that only the lighter people could get to the plane first, and myself was one of the people who floated a lot on Myers and Phineas. We got there, we broke, and then luckily Alfonso came, and we pulled the guy out. And then just after pulling him out, he was so resisting, and he started speaking, you know, this in this French accent. My wife, were like, no, your wife is not here. And initially I thought maybe his wife is also there with him. But then what he meant was, I wanted to phone my wife and give me a phone.
Yeah.
Then we told him, okay, you can only phone when we get back to the base. Then he said, no, phone in the plane. Then we started searching for the phone in the plane, which was a set phone. Then he did that call, made that call, and yeah, we...
spoke to his wife.
Yeah, I spoke to his wife. And with obviously all the nappies which we saw in the plane. And yeah, we started... The next thing was, you know, the other challenge was to move all sorts of things that could pollute the environment. And we brought some bags and stuff to carry those things back to the bay. So we did something like two trips, if I remember well.
Carrying all of his things that were in the plane to the bay, so that they don't pollute the area.
Yeah.
And what did you do with the wreckage of the plane?
It stayed there until the following takeover, when they came to pick us up.
A few months. And how long did the Frenchman stay on the island?
He stayed less than 3 months, if I remember well.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he was such a good company, I must say. He very funny, and he got picked up by this French Navy.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Good. What did he do the whole time? Did he go out and help you with your work?
He didn't do, you know, work. He didn't help us a lot, but then he was a good entertainer.
Ah, okay.
In a sense that there was very less that he didn't know.
Mm.
And he was a wise man, I must say. And again, we happened to like the same music, me and him. So I remember at some point I had to borrow him my CDs as well as my radio for entertainment.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he read a lot. He had some books with him. He read a lot.
Okay, in the plane that he got.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And is there anything else that you want to tell me about your year?
My year was quite a good one. But then I had promised myself, obviously, to come back. And just after that whole stay at Marion Island. And I must say, the team was also a fantastic one. And we got along most of the times. Of course, there's, you know, quite a number of occasions where, you know, team members didn't really feel like speaking to each other and all that, but it didn't last longer. That was one other good thing about our team, because we could upset each other and then, you know,
work it out,
and then we continue. Life carries on.
Okay. So, when you got back from Marion, what did you do?
Well, I went back to the University of Pretoria, of which I had shown interest in genetics, and obviously spoke to Matan, who was meant to be my supervisor. And he managed to secure some, you know, grant from the NRF. And I went to do some, you know, genetics work on southern elephant seals, and which I later on furthered, you know, as a master's.
In genetics?
Yeah, of elephant seals.
Of the elephant seals.
Yeah, so yeah, that as I said, I did my honors project on it, and which was in 2004, and then I did my MSc, you know, 2005 to 2008, because I had taken a job at Sunbee.
Okay.
You know, in my second year, I remember. Yeah.
Okay.
when the ship got back, how was it to be back in South Africa?
I remember I was one of the very, very last people to be picked up, or rather say the team. That was then. Everybody would be flown back to the boat. But then I remember I was one of the people who was late, who got late to go to the heli hangar, which is a bit, you know, of a walk. And obviously my fear was to get back to the SA Gallas, because I had promised myself I was never going to go back.
Mm.
And with all the excitement afterwards, when I got there, things were very much calm. And we had a very, very successful and very safe voyage back home. And again, what also drove me very, very, you know, what also made it better, I was looking forward to the new beginning afterwards. So the ship was not much of a...
Wasn't that bad the second time?
Yeah, second time. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you were here for a year, what did you miss about home? What did you miss about South Africa?
Well, I must say, more into music, and I had a choir, which I was more like a conductor.
Okay.
And missed, you know, the choir itself. And also, I was a youth leader at my church, which was the Evangelical Presbyterian, which I very, very missed, dearly missed, because, you know, I was the chairperson of the youth.
Okay.
At a national level then.
And so you got back and then you could continue with these things.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now to get to your work that you're doing here now,
mm-hmm.
Tell me, what exactly are you now doing on this takeover?
Well, I'm more like an environmental officer, or rather say I'm an environmental officer, and we have challenges as the department, you know, keeping this island as pristine as possible. It's quite a mission, because one thing for sure, we have people from different backgrounds.
Mm.
Some may not even have the environment, I mean the conservation sense of some sort.
Mm.
So my duty as an environmental officer is to see to it that, you know, at least people do understand the mere fact that they need to operate in a manner that doesn't really have a negative impact to the environment. And we do so by, you know, quarantining things that get brought here from South Africa. And then we also make sure that, you know, there's no bugs or propagules of some sort that may definitely find its way and live here, as, you know, aliens are one of the dangerous things that can take over.
Okay. And how long have you been doing this?
Well, I've started in August. I started this job in August last year.
August.
So I'm fairly new, yeah.
And this is the first takeover that you're environmental officer?
First takeover for Marion Island.
Yes.
And, well, last year I came down for a construction work, which was quite intense, because, I mean, we had too much cargo to quarantine. And we also had a lot to worry about when it came to where do we put, you know, the construction material. Do we put it on the vegetation itself, or do we have to come up with, you know, mechanisms which would allow, you know, us building without impacting the environment?
Yes. So, and what did you decide to do in that instance?
Well, most of the time, the building material would be put on designated areas where we would obviously rehabilitate as soon as we...
As it moves. Okay.
And obviously that prevents us from, you know, putting all over, and which may obviously be lethal to some point, of course, because, mm-hmm. I mean, if we don't have a pattern, we may not necessarily manage, and we'll end up losing a lot.
Yeah, a lot of the environment. Yeah. Okay. So you now explained a little bit of the work that you've now done as an environmental control officer, but tell me, why do you think it's important to preserve Marion Island?
Well, to start with, Marion Island is a home for a quite number of biodiversities. So, as a result, imagine somebody destroying a home. You may not necessarily like it, but then if you are a seal, you'd really love to come back to Marion and breed. And obviously, you know, I'm quite fond of biodiversity itself, so I'll still think that, you know, in order for us to keep this biodiversity, we need to definitely have efforts in protecting it. And I have a very, very good saying which I usually, you know, say when I speak about conservation. It always reminds me that, you know, we didn't get, you know, this whole world for ourselves, but we have borrowed it for future generations. So as a result, we need to, like, you know,
take care of it okay.
pretty well in order for us to give it back to the liable owners, which are the, you know, the distant future.
Okay. And so your work entails making sure, your work entails educating people and making sure that they understand how they should take care of the place.
Very true, very true.
Okay, so I'm on the wrong. Okay, yeah. Good. Is there anything else that you would like to add about your work that you're doing here?
Well, apart from saying that, you know, there has been quite a number of laws which have been set and put in place just to see to it that this environment is protected. But most people are unaware. I would imagine we definitely need, at some point, people who are going to focus solely on educating people about these laws. Because some, you know, laws are there and made available to govern and management, and for the management, better management of resources. So I would imagine that, you know, while everybody is busy with their science, they need to be taught, or at least highlighted, of the mere fact of some of the clauses that binds them to be, you know, taking very good consideration when doing things.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think is the worst misconception that people have about the island? What do they think, but that's not right? In terms of, for example, you said you didn't know about seals. I mean, do you know, what does the general public think about the islands?
Well, why do you study things at these islands? That's one of the questions which people don't really necessarily understand.
And what do you answer them if they ask you this?
I would give them a typical example about climate. You know, we have a station here that feeds the general globe about, you know, climate change and stuff like that. And again, we tend to know the weather that's on our way to South Africa simply because of the station. And again, I also talk about, you know, I've learned a lot in as far as mating systems are concerned, you know, how they influence genes and stuff like that. Those are the kind of things that obviously as people may not necessarily know, but then I should be, I'm quite sure that in most cases when I have to, you know, speak to people about genetics, I always refer back to Southern Elephant Seal mating system and use it as an example. And I, you know, relate that to practical issues that we have in our societies. For instance, polygamy, which would definitely influence, you know, the genetic diversity. And again, we, as you may know, our president is in a polygamy relationship and all that. So in most cases, when I have to advise people with my genetic background, I always refer back to Southern Elephant Seals, because I've used tangible data where polygamous mating systems are investigated, how and how do they influence the genes. So those are the kind of things that I think we learn. Because, I mean, it's not all about our knowledge here may be quite applicable in other societies or elsewhere.
Okay.
So we tend to be very knowledgeable in all respects.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much. Anything else that you would like to add?
No, apart from the mere fact that I'm quite grateful that I'm going to make part of history.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.